Welcome back, baseball amigos, to episode 70 of the Nats GM Show, the only podcast available via the Nats GM Radio Network. I'm your host, Ryan Sullivan, editor-in-chief of NatsGM.com and the Baron of All Baseball Podcasts. The Nats GM Show is proudly sponsored by No Halftime and the No Halftime app. If you're asking what No Halftime and the No Halftime app might be, let me fill you in. You are staring at your weekly fantasy opponent and thinking to yourself, I would love to challenge just one of his players, not his entire team. But your fantasy sports service doesn't allow you to. Now you can on the all-new No Halftime app. The No Halftime app allows you to create individual challenges using players or teams. For example, you could pit Bryce Harper versus Mike Trout, Miguel Cabrera versus Manny Machado, or Chris Davis versus Matt Kemp. Creating a challenge takes seconds, and accepting challenges is even easier. No Halftime challenges can be private or public and created for the MLB, NFL, NBA, NHL, PGA, and other sports. Join today and get started. Real money and fantasy supremacy awaits you. And now you can also try No Halftime for free with $0 challenges. Visit NoHalftime.com for more information and to download the No Halftime app for your iPhone or Android device. Receive a bonus by entering in the promo code NATSGM at signup. Receive a free t-shirt when you make a deposit. No Halftime, where the fantasy sports season never takes a break.
This is Mike Farron from SiriusXM's MLB Network Radio, and you're listening to the Nats GM Show.
Proud to welcome back to the show, senior writer for MLB.com and MLBPipeline.com and the MLB draft guru, Jim Callis. Jim, welcome back to the Nats GM Show.
Thanks, Ryan. Thanks. Glad to always enjoy talking draft, as you well know. So,
and we find ourselves less than 2 weeks away from the draft, so first and foremost, I want to thank you for coming on and sharing a little bit of time. I can only imagine how swamped you are, and I'm really excited to pick your brain today and get ready for the MLB draft.
Yeah, no, it's like I said, it seems like that's all I'm doing 24/7 is in drafts, so glad to do it.
So let's start first and foremost kind of with your overall thoughts on this year's class. What are some of the strengths and the weaknesses of the crop that we're going to be drafting in 2 weeks?
Well, I think the strength, unquestionably, is high school pitching, which is going to make for an interesting draft. I mean, we've got our top two rated prospects, our high school pitchers in Jason Groom and Riley Pine. They have been all year. We're going to have a new top 200 prospect list out with videos and reports, and we shuffle around the guys who are on our previous version of the list, which went 100 deep. And I'm just counting them in my head. I think we have seven high school pitchers in the top 16 prospects. And Ed, you aren't going to see seven high school pitchers taken in the first 16 picks just because the industry's kind of skittish about the health risks with high school arms. So it'll be interesting. All those guys won't go that high. Other guys will wind up going lower. So that's interesting. You know, I think in terms of weaknesses, I think the biggest weakness is I just don't think this draft has the guys that you'd like. If you're picking the top of the draft, you wish you had better guys to pick from, if that makes any sense. You know, it's funny, we said this last year, and I think unquestionably guys like Dansby Swanson, Alex Bregman, Brandon Rogers, Andrew Benintendi would all clearly be the number one pick in this year's draft. So even though we were lamenting that state of affairs at the top of last year's draft, it was better than it is this year. That's probably the biggest weakness.
Yeah, but it feels like, and we said this off-air a little bit, it feels like there's a lot of depth from, you said, 25 to 45. I feel like maybe you could even extend that, you know, close to, into the third and fourth round this year.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there aren't a lot of up-the-middle players in this draft, and there aren't a lot of college pitchers necessarily to go in the top 15, but there is depth. You know, there are a lot of college arms that kind of will go in that mid-first or second round range. There are some college bats. As you get lower, there is depth. And I mean, even, you know, in any draft, there's going to be a pretty good player in the sixth round, a pretty good player in the 10th round, a pretty good player in the 15th round. So, you know, I'm guilty of this. It seems like every year almost I'm writing a story where scouting directors are lamenting the state of the draft. But I think that's just the normal state of affairs. You know, teams are very aggressive at signing players out of high school. And so, you know what? The reason there aren't a lot of college athletes is you're not letting them get to college. You're signing them out of high school. It just, I think that's just what you kind of expect every year. That's what you get.
Let's start with the top of your list and the two high school arms everybody seems to be talking about. Jason Groom, the lefty, and Riley Pint, the righty. I'd love for you to break down both players, if you could, for those certainly in the audience that don't know them very well.
Yeah, we've had, you know, Jason Groom is from New Jersey. We've had him ranked number one all year. You know, I mean, 6'6 lefty, you know, low 90s fastball, can hit 96, nasty curveball, you know, especially for high school kid, you know, he commands it and it's got really good spin. He flashes pretty good changeup with sink, good delivery, good feel for pitching. You know, probably the only question with him would be some maturity issues, maybe. You know, that's probably the biggest knock on him. You know, Pint, probably, you could argue that Pint probably has a higher ceiling. I mean, he might have the highest ceiling in the draft. Floor is lower. He's 6'4 righty, athletic. I mean, he's hit 102 this spring. He throws 93-97. His curveball, it's a power curve. He can turn it into a slider if he wants. He has a plus changeup, too. He doesn't really need it right now, but, I mean, scouts love the changeup. You know, the difference, I think, between him and Groom, besides the lefty-righty, you know, Pint's stuff is a little bit better, and he's got a better changeup. But he's just inconsistent with his mechanics and control and command. So that's a little worrisome, I think, to teams that love the stuff. Nobody questions the stuff, but just wished he could harness it a little bit better. You know, even acknowledging he's in high school. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see where they go, because like I said earlier, Ryan, I think the industry as a whole is skittish of high school pitchers. They never seem to go as high as you think they're going to go based on where they're ranked, or at least ranked in the media. And I don't think the Phillies and Reds were ever going to take a high school pitcher one or two in this draft. Even with it not being a draft with a lot of great candidates to go in those top spots, I just don't think the Phillies or Reds were ever on taking, you know, either of those guys or any high school pitcher with one of those top first two selections.
And it's probably very unfair to say it, but I feel like there's a little bit of Tyler Kolek surrounding Riley Pint. Do you see any similarities or concerns with the Pint profile in light of kind of the struggles that Kolek has had?
No, because to me they're totally different. I mean, they both threw hard, and Kolek is probably the hardest, most consistently, tie my tongue here, he's probably the most consistently hardest throwing pitcher in high school history. But totally different body. He had this big, thick frame. Pint's lean and athletic. Pint's got feel for, I mean, Kolek just threw hard. That's what he did. He reared back and he threw hard. Pint's got feel for secondary pitches. He just needs to repeat his mechanics more consistently. So I don't think the comparison outside of the velocity really holds. That said, and I'm not a doctor. I'm not claiming I've done any big study on this. But I think, and this is one of the reasons the industry is skittish, though, about high school pitchers, is it just seems to me that throwing 95, 96 as a high school kid, you know, while it's exciting, it isn't necessarily a good thing for your long-term health. I'm becoming more convinced that your body isn't built. You know, Kolek was like this horse, like this 260-pound horse, and he got hurt. And I just don't think your joints or whatever, your body's built to throw that hard on a repeated basis when you're that young. And you know, I think that's why, you know, these guys all seem to get hurt. And it's nothing. I don't look at Riley Pint's mechanics and say, oh my God, that's an awful delivery. It hurts my shoulder to look at. He's going to blow out. I'm not saying that, but like, it does concern me with all these high school guys who really throw hard that, okay, he's doing that at 18, but is he going to be healthy at 20? And I think the industry, you know, kind of feels the same way too, which is, well, it'll be interesting to see where these guys go.
Yeah, and we have seen a high level of washouts from high school first rounders in the last, you know, 10 years or so of the draft.
Yeah, no, I mean, the only time in draft history you ever had high school pitchers go 1-2 was 2 years ago when Brady Aiken went 1 and Tyler Kolek went 2, and they didn't even make it 2 years before they both had Tommy John surgery.
Amazing. Let's turn our attention, if I can, or your attention anyways, to the college arms that are available. Got to start with A.J. Puck down at Florida. Long known on the prospect circles, looks the part, but commands a little iffy. What do you see from A.J. Puck?
Yeah, you know, I'm a little later on him than most, although he has pitched well down the stretch. He pitched very well in the SEC tournament. He pitched pretty well in three of his final four regular season starts, so he's showing what he wanted to show. I mean, when he's on, it's a mid-90s fastball. It's a wipeout slider. As you point out, I mean, his control command aren't real consistent. They've been better down the stretch. He doesn't have a track record of dominating for long periods of time at Florida. He's, you know, not that he's been terrible, but it's just, you know, for a guy, and I really do feel like the teams at the top of the draft feel like if he's on, and he's been on lately, he's the best player in the draft. I think the Phillies have been waiting for him to basically pound his fist on the table and say, I'm the number one pick. And I think he's done that, especially with how he pitched this SEC tournament. And I think if Phillies passed on him, I think the Reds and the Braves at 2 and 3 would both take him. So, I mean, this is, I think, the guy the teams at the top would all take. I'm not quite as high on him, but I think he's going to probably be the number one pick. I just wish he, you know, for me, and, you know, maybe it's not fair because it's not like Jason Groom or Riley Pine pitched in college against better competition, but just for a guy who's on a very good college team, who's going to be probably the number one pick, I just wish he just kind of overmatched opponents more often than he does. I think he's good. I just don't see him as that classic 1-1 college starter, but I think that he's going to be that guy who does go 1-1.
I mean, I can't ever remember a situation, and I certainly don't in the draft like you do, but where the 1-1 pick may not even be the best starter or the Friday night starter on his team, and that's Logan Schorr, who is probably a first-round or maybe a supplemental first-round pick himself.
Yeah, I mean, Logan probably fits somewhere, I'd say, late first, early second. I mean, entirely, I mean, they're both Gators pitchers, but kind of apples and oranges. I mean, one guy's a 6'7 lefty, Schorr's 6'1 righty. You know, A.J. Puck, you know, has two dominant pitches. Logan Schorr's best pitch is his changeup. You know, velocity's been down slightly this year. He's had been dealing with some weird non-arm issues. He's had a blister on his foot, and he's had, I think he had a wisdom tooth removed and had like a kind of an infection that kind of sapped him a little bit. But, I mean, Logan Schorr goes out there and wins every Friday night. I mean, and I don't mean this as a knock on A.J. Puck, but if you could combine, if you could take the best of A.J. Puck and the best of Logan Schorr, you have a guy with a mid-90s fastball that can hit the upper 90s, a wipeout slider, a tremendous changeup, well, you know, at least above average, maybe plus control, and tremendous competitive makeup. I mean, that guy would clearly be that combination of A.J. Schorr or Logan Puck. I guess he'd be an ambidextrous pitcher too. Would be the best pitcher, the best player in the draft by far.
Is there a little bit of a Mike Leake comp on Logan Schorr?
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that. He's, in terms of the stuff, you know, not being overpowering, but the guy just really competes at a high level. Yeah, I could see that. I don't think he's going to go seventh overall like Leake did. I think, you know, Leake was more athletic than Logan Schorr. Not that Logan's a bad athlete, but, you know, Leake went seventh overall, and Logan Schorr is probably getting closer to, say, 37th.
Another two arms that I really want to ask you about are, and I've seen them this week both pitch, are Dakota Hudson at Mississippi State and Zach Birdie at Louisville. Dakota Hudson last night was throwing one of the nastiest cutters I've seen in a long time.
That might be the best pitch in the draft if you're just grading it out. I mean, because a lot of times when a guy has a cutter, it's like, you know, or if a guy, when a guy throws a three-quarters breaking ball, you know, a lot of times a guy throws a cutter because he couldn't develop a breaking ball, and it kind of has fat, slider. It's more notable. It doesn't have slider break, and it doesn't have fastball velocity. You know, but you know, it's an effective pitch for guys who can't develop a breaking ball. You know, Hudson's cutter is like it can approach 90 miles an hour and has slider break. I mean, you could call that. A lot of times when guys have a slider, it's more of a cutter. I think you could call his cutter more of a slider, if that makes sense. And he throws 93, 95. He's had pretty good velocity all season. I do think, Ryan, he's the number two college pitcher. He had a brief slump for about 3 weeks in April, came out of it. It's a guy who'd been a reliever in the past, good Cape Cod last summer. Guys want to see, okay, is he going to hold up as a starter? He has. I think he still could sneak into the top 10 picks because there are going to be teams who want college starters. And he's the number two guy. You know, Birdie's interesting in that I do think that you could send him out as a starter if you wanted to. It's not like his brother. He's got a better delivery than his brother, better changeup than his brother. I mean, I've had guys hang, you know, solid to plus grades on the changeup. But I think because he's hit 101 in the past and, you know, he doesn't throw quite as hard as his brother, He doesn't have quite as devastating a slider, but both his fastball and slider are formidable. I just think he's going to move so quick as a reliever that it's going to be an interesting decision because you could really play that either way. You have more value as a starter, obviously, but I think whoever takes him is going to pop. Is going to take him and just say, "Hey, we're going to have this guy in a year in the big leagues in a year as a reliever." I think he goes. You know, I don't think teams draft relievers quite as high as they used to, but I could see him going in the first round. And if a team is willing to start him, then I think he has an even greater chance to go in the first round. So it'll be interesting. I mean, he has, you know, three pretty good pitches, you know, even though he's a closer for Louisville. He's going to go pretty good. The guy who I think gets undersold a little bit, you know, and I guess it's because of his height, and he had Tommy John in the past, and he doesn't have the most pinpoint control, but the guy I really like, Jordan Sheffield, you know, this guy would have been a first-round pick out of high school probably. You know, I mean, it's well above average fastball. It's plus slider. The changeup can be plus at times. You know, he's not a real big guy, but, you know, teams slept on, you know, Marcus Stroman, and Stroman didn't have Tommy John in his past. I don't think there's too many starters on the college side this year, and maybe none, who have a better chance to have three-plus pitches than Jordan Sheffield. And to me, I would take Hudson as my second college pitcher drafted after A.J. Puck, and then I would take Jordan Sheffield. And it's like I'm having a hard time getting a sense of exactly where he's going to fit in the first round, but he should fit somewhere in the middle of the first round.
And the last arm I got to ask you about is probably, to steal your phrase, my personal cheese ball in this draft, Eric Lauer from Kent State. What are you thinking on him?
Yeah, I think he probably goes in the first round. I mean, you know, it's hard to argue with the numbers. You know, the Mid-America Conference is probably down a little bit this year, but I think he's given up earned runs in two of his last 12 starts. He's got a 0.69 ERA the last time I looked. And the thing is, no pun intended, he, you know, because he plays for the Golden Flashes, he's not a flash in the pan. I mean, he could have been an early-round pick out of high school in Ohio 3 years ago. He led the Cape Cod League in strikeouts last year. Yeah, he probably doesn't have a true plus pitch, but the fastball and slider are solid. The curveball and changeup are at least average. He commands them all pretty well. He mixes them. He's got effortless delivery. You know, he's a good athlete. I mean, he's an all-state receiver in Ohio. He's left-handed. You know, I'm not saying I would take him over A.J. Puck, but what I might say is, if let's say right now today, I had to have a guy pitch a college game or a low-level minor league game to save my life, and I could have A.J. Puck or Eric Lauer, Eric Lauer might give me a better chance to win. A.J. Puck might look more dominant, but A.J. Puck might go out there and walk six and five innings. So Lauer can really pitch, and, you know, it's going to be interesting. I'll tell you what's interesting about him, Ryan, is I have not kept track of who's doing what in these various tournaments. But if Kent State goes to the NCAA regionals, whoever has to face Eric Lauer, you know, Kent, I would assume, would be a 3 or 4 seed. You know, so you're going to have a pretty good team facing Eric Lauer in the first round. That's not going to be fun.
Not at all. That's going to be a really tough matchup for whoever draws them if they do actually end up winning that conference tournament.
Yeah, no, definitely. So, I mean, and you know, but I like, you know, in terms of where he goes, I think he probably goes somewhere, you know, the college pitchers would have got to go high. We're not going to have only one college pitcher taking the top 12 or 15 picks. You know, I mean, I think he goes somewhere in the second half of the first round.
Yeah, I think that's a good fit. I think some team's going to get a real nice value with him and Sheffield, as you mentioned, in that area. So let me turn our attention to the bats if we can.
Sure.
You mentioned a couple of the names at the beginning, but I want to ask you a little bit about kind of the two top outfield college bats in Corey Ray and Kyle Lewis. Maybe to introduce them to the audience a little bit, Corey Ray plays at Louisville, and I believe Lewis plays at Mercer.
That's correct.
Lewis looked pretty good on the Cape last summer. The competition's a little bit of a question mark. Corey Ray is maybe not the prototypical guy you'd want at the top of the draft, but kind of your thoughts on those guys.
Yeah, I mean, those two, along with Nick Senzel, Tennessee, are the top three college bats in this draft. You know, we rank them Lewis, Ray, Senzel. Yeah, I've heard them ranked a bunch of different ways. I think, yeah, as we speak, Ryan, Senzel probably if I had to bet which guys first were taken, it might be Senzel. But, you know, Lewis, I'll go in the order we ranked him. You know, Lewis, as you mentioned, played at Mercer. You know, and you do hear, okay, quality competition. You know, you wonder about that a little bit. But, like, it doesn't bother me. I mean, do I wish Kyle Lewis was at the SEC? And you see him against better competition? Sure, but, like, he isn't. And so what would you want him to do? You'd want him to dominate the Southern Conference, and he's done that the last 2 years. When he went to the Cape, he was one of the best hitters in the Cape last summer. So to me, from a performance standpoint, he's done what you want him to do. It's not like he just had a so-so year, and you know he might be the best power hitter in this draft. He kind of physically looks like a right-handed Jason Hayward, you know, at that point of his career. He's pretty young for a college junior. He won't be 21 until after the draft. You know, I think he winds up in right field, although depending on who you talk to, I think the majority of scouts probably give him a better chance to stay in center than the Corey Ray does of playing there. Ray plays more in the corner for Louisville. But, you know, I like Kyle Lewis. You know, he's drawn walks this year. He's been pitched around a lot. And he hasn't tried to do too much. Good athlete for his size. Ray was the best all-around hitter on Team USA last summer. He's having a great year. As well, not necessarily batting average-wise, but among the national leaders in steals, he's got a bunch of home runs. I mean, I think this is a future 2020 guy, probably a better chance to hit for average, not quite as much power as Lewis, but I think, like I said, he's a 20-homer guy. Runs well enough to play center, but hasn't played center at Louisville. Arms okay. You know, he might wind up in left field, but I think the bat still profiles if he winds up in left field. And then Senzel doesn't have the power those two guys have, but he's probably a better pure hitter. Big question on him coming in the year was position. He was DH as a freshman and second baseman as a sophomore. He's played a good third base, finished the year playing shortstop for Tennessee. Did a nice job on a bad team where he got pitched around a lot of not trying to do too much and took his walks when they came to him. Yeah, you'd like to see that. You see more power in BP than you do in the game. I think it's more a matter of approach than it's a lack of power. It's potentially he could have more defensive value than Lewis and Ray if those guys wind up on the corners, and he does stick at third base, and he should be able to stick at third base. But those are probably those are the three top college bats, and I think there's a good chance Senzel could go 2 to the Reds, and that Kyle Lewis could go 3 to the 3 to the Braves, and then Corey Ray will go probably somewhere in the top 5, 6, 7, 8 picks.
I've read a right-handed Bill Miller comp for Nick Senzel. Fair comp or a little light on the power?
I think that's fair based on what he's shown so far. I mean, I think whoever picks him is hoping for more power than Bill Miller had, but that's not terrible. I mean, he's a pure hitting third baseman who's probably not going to be a big time power guy who, you know, gets the job done at third. He's not going to win a gold glove. That's not bad. And, you know, it's funny because, like, at first you'd think, like, boy, like, kind of damning him with free praise, but Bill Miller, I think, had a better career than people realized. He had a long big league career, 11 years in the major leagues, and, you know, was on a number of winning teams and, you know, very good player.
Yeah, I mean, if you can get somebody that can bat near 300 with, you know, 12 to 15 home runs a year, and can play a nice third base, that's a really good ball player.
Yeah, he was a better player, I think, than people realized.
Definitely. Another guy I got to ask you about, I think he's probably at the top of the catcher rankings in this draft, although I think catcher is a little bit in the eye of the beholder this season, but Zach Collins at Miami he's pounding the baseball this season. What are your thoughts on him both behind the dish and at the plate?
He is having a great year. I think he's kind of clearly the number four hitter, college hitter in this draft. I'm sure whoever drafts him will look at him as a catcher. There's 30 teams. You know, I like Kyle Schwarber a lot. I never thought Kyle Schwarber was going to be a catcher, even though he has the work ethic, you know, and the desire to do it. I never thought that he was going to be a catcher. The Cubs believed in his ability to potentially be a catcher. Zach Collins, I'll put it this way. I have not talked to anybody who's told me that guy can catch. Everybody thinks he's going to wind up being a first baseman. But I think the bat plays that plays fine at first base. He probably goes, I think there's a chance he sneaks into the top 10, but he probably goes into the 11 to 20 range somewhere.
Gotcha. And final bat I really want to ask you about, started the season atop a lot of rankings and has definitely had a poor, or at least slipped in this season, is Buddy Reed at Florida. Tremendous athlete, questions about the hit tool, it seems like. give me some confidence in Buddy Reed. I love him so much.
Yeah, I mean, Buddy had a chance. If Buddy had come out and hit and had a good year, if he'd looked as good this spring as he did at the College World Series when I saw him last June, he would have been the first college player drafted, because I think he's got the best tools in the class, but he's just never hit consistently. And yeah, you know, part of that is that he played soccer and hockey in Rhode Island and didn't have a lot of experience, but he's been in college for 3 years, and scouts wanted to see more out of the bat. I mean, he's a well above average runner, definite center fielder, you know, strong arm, but he just, you know, it's kind of, if you're projecting him out and you like him, I think it's hard to give him much more than an average bat and kind of, you know, below average power right now. But I don't know where he's going to go. Like, I could see somebody still gambling on the athlete and buying that you could, you know, do something and make him into a better hitter. And he still is young for his age, baseball-wise, if that makes sense. But I think Buddy probably is going, if I had to guess right now, I'd say bottom third of the first round, and he had a chance to go, you know, significantly higher than that coming into the year.
There's some boom and bust in him, but he really could. If you could get him in the 20s, that's probably a pretty nice value.
Yeah, although, again, I think it's not like he's falling because there's signability questions. It's just It's hitability questions, and he hasn't answered them.
Yeah, that's a great point. Jim, if I could turn our attention a little bit closer to locally, at least in my neck of the woods, so to speak, I want to ask you about some of the local prospects in this area. First place I should probably start is Virginia, with Connor Jones on the mound and Matt, I believe it's Thace, the catcher. What are your thoughts on those guys, and where do you see them going?
I think they both probably go in the first round. I mean, Connor's kind of your classic. He's not sexy. You know, it's not wow stuff, but it's good stuff. He's got track record success at Virginia. You know, although speaking of track record, I mean, Virginia's had a lot of highly drafted pitchers, and a lot of them got hurt. Not that, you know, saying that anybody on, you know, at Virginia is ruining pitchers, but that does come up when you talk to scouts about Connor Jones. They worry about that a little bit, but, you know, it's good fastball, solid slider. You know, three-pitch guy with a changeup. He'll even mix in the curve. You know, control's fine. You know, I don't think he's a front-of-the-rotation guy, but it could be a number three or four guy. If you're looking for combination of, you know, plus fastball and performance, you know, and track record, some ceiling and some floor, you know, it's a pretty good track record for a college pitcher. You know, Theis is kind of like Zach Collins in that he's a bat-first catcher. Again, I think most people I've talked to don't think he stays a catcher, but do like the bat. I mean, he's got some pure hitting in him. You know, I think it could be like 15 or so homers a year. It might be like a 280 to 300 with 15 to 20 homers a year. Yeah, you probably get more offensive production out of him if he doesn't catch. I mean, again, whoever takes Zach Collins, will send those guys out as catchers, and you'll see if that'll work. But I think Theis probably goes somewhere, you know, in the bottom, you know, 10 picks or so in the first round, and if not, I don't think he lasts very long into the second.
Okay. Anybody else on UVA we should be aware of?
Not that high. I mean, they're not guys who are going to go in the first, you know, day or first three or four rounds of the draft, so off the top of my head.
Okay. How about University of Maryland? I know Mike, I'm a big fan of Mike Schworn. I've watched him a whole bunch the last couple of years, and I guess Nick Sierra is probably the only other draft notable player for the Terps.
Yeah, with Schworn, you know, what's interesting on him is he came into the year, I think he had a chance to be a first-round pick, and he got off to a slow start. He's really picked it up down the stretch and looked like the guy people have seen in the past. I don't think he goes in the first round, but I'll bet he goes in the second round, and that could be nice value, because if he pitched like he did down the stretch, I want to say, I don't have it for me, I think he struck out 16 guys the other day in the Big Ten tournament.
He did.
If he pitched like that all season, I guess asking 16 strikes, that would have been ridiculous, but if he pitched like the guy that people expected all season, then I think he would have been in that mix of college pitchers at the end of the first round.
Yeah, he made himself a lot of money the other day with those 16 strikeouts in that tournament game. Absolutely. Nick Sierra, I'm worried about a position with him, but I like the bat a little bit.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, Maryland is not one of my draft states. I haven't spoken to anybody about him. He's not on our top 200. I don't have a great feel for where he's going to go in the draft, to be honest with you.
Very cool. How about Errol Robinson at Ole Miss, played at St. John's local high school?
He'll go higher than we have him ranked. He's not in our top 200, and he's had kind of a – he's hit a little better recently. The guys I talk to, I do Mississippi. I probably talked to four different scouts down there, just not big fan. There's some defensive ability there, although I think it's more of a he's a college shortstop, a good state shortstop, which is rare. But I think it's more of a solid defender. I don't think you're talking Gold Glove caliber defender, and I just think it's a really light bat. Based on what I've heard, again, it's more, I think, a cross section. I wish I could talk to all 30 teams, but I can't. I just don't have the time to talk about 30 teams, about 200 or so players. But I just haven't talked to anybody who was jumping up and down and taking the first five rounds. Now, you do get drafted by the team that takes you the most, not the consensus. So I could see, a guy who could stay at shortstop going, fifth round or so. But he had kind of a disappointing year with the bat.
Yeah, agreed. Let's grab a couple of the high school guys, particularly in Northern Virginia. I got to ask you about your alma mater, or share the same alma mater, Joe Rizzo, over in at Oakton, I believe.
Yeah, definitely. It's always good to see Oakton with the prospect. Joe's interesting. He's one of the best high school bats in the draft. I think the question on him is power. Not a real big guy, not the quickest guy. Kind of needs to make third base work. You don't see too many 5'9" first basemen. The bat could play there. He's another guy who's more of a hitter than a power guy right now, but which, to be honest, that's the way you'd rather see it. I think the guys who are gifted hitters will develop power. I think he'll have at least average power. But if he's not third baseman, he's a left fielder. Obviously he'll get every opportunity to play third. And I think the positive thing about that, too, is when you play third, I do think it's a position just through sheer work ethic, you could become a passable third baseman, because it's more reactions than, having to have a ton of quickness. And he does have a good work ethic. Everybody praises his makeup. So I think he's got a chance to make that work. I think he could go – I don't think he goes in the first round, but he could go in the sandwich round or maybe early second round. I think he's going to go pretty high.
So he's not going to make it to college then?
I would only offer the caveat that I have not broken down the signability of every guy. That's another thing that I can't point to for every guy. And some, there are going to be high school players who we don't realize have a high price tag until we see them slide in the draft. And I'm not saying he'll be one of them, but I don't know for sure what he's looking, what his asking price would be. But if he gets drafted in the first 50 picks or so, the team's not going to take him unless they know they're going to be able to sign him. So that would be a good indication.
Terrific point. Khalil Lee, also Northern Virginia, started the year as a center field prospect, but is actually, I've heard some things about good things about him on the mound this spring. Anything on him?
Yeah, with him, you kind of hit the nail on the head. It's like, what do you do with this guy? He's, left-handed pitcher with low 90s fastball. He is only about 5'10", so maybe it's hard to project him as a starter long term. As a center fielder, he's got some speed, athleticism, good hitting ability, more of that line drive guy. Obviously, strong arm. Virginia's not one of my states, so I haven't talked to a lot of scouts about him. But I will say, it seems like traditionally, most of your guys who are gifted two-way players, especially coming out of high school, so they have the leverage of, I can go to college if I don't sign. It seems like the vast majority of those guys want to play every day rather than pitch every fifth day. So I wouldn't be surprised if he comes out as a position player. Also, I think the teams look at it too, that if the pitching doesn't work out, it's hard to put the guy, make the guy back into a position player if he's lost 2-3 years of at-bats. But the flip side's a lot easier. If somebody spends 2-3 years as a position player and doesn't hit, you can convert him to a pitcher. So I think because of that and his size, my guess is he gets drafted as an outfielder, but he's a pretty intriguing two-way guy.
Yeah, Michael Givens for the Orioles jumps out as a similar situation a couple years ago. Jim, I could ask you about players all day, but maybe we should jump into the lightning round now?
Yeah, let's do some lightning round.
All right, let's do it. First question, who are your favorite day two prospects and or your personal cheese ball in this crop?
Okay, so we're saying day two would be somebody who, outside the top 75 picks. I'll tell you, a guy who's kind of raising up, and he snuck up on me, he's leading the SEC in home runs all of a sudden after going on a tear late in the year is J.B. Woodman, outfielder. You know, again, we're talking about a draft where it's not a good draft for college position players, and he's a guy who is a known quantity coming out of high school. He's got all-around tools. You know, good, not great tools, but, like, you know, went on tear for Ole Miss at the end of the season, was leading SEC with 13 home runs heading into their tournament. You know, it wouldn't surprise me, to be honest. He might sneak into the top two rounds, but right now we kind of have him ranked outside that range. So he's interesting. And a guy who would be more intriguing because he just hasn't pitched a lot, Mason Thompson, high school pitcher from Texas, probably would have been a first-round pick or at least a first-round talent, but he had Tommy John surgery last year, pitched one inning in a playoff game. He's thrown at least one bullpen I've known about. You know, but it's a super athletic body. Arm works well. You know, it's not why he blew out his arm and had Tommy John surgery. He wasn't anything with the delivery of the arm action. But good velocity, promising secondary pitches. I'll be curious to see where he goes because signability could come into play on him.
And who's your cheese ball this year?
You know who it might be? And he's a good player. But, like, I think he deserves more consideration, I guess, as a first-round type of guy. Would be Sheldon Noisy at Oklahoma. I don't think he's going to stay at shortstop, but he's one of the best college position players. He could definitely play the infield. He's been a much better hitter this year. There's some power in there. And he also has got a plus fastball and a pretty good slider as a closer, too. I like Sheldon Noisy. He's not a sleeper by any means. I don't see how he gets out of the second round, but I kind of like him as a first-round pick, personally.
Okay, good name, good name. Next question. 10 years from now, who's the best player from this draft class?
I will say Kyle Lewis.
Okay, good answer.
I think he's got the Kai's combination of ceiling and floor in this draft.
Okay. Next one, player or players who are climbing the draft boards the fastest right now?
Climbing the fastest?
Climbing, yes.
Yeah. Well, it seems to change, but I think Matt Manning is one of them. I think of guys who were in the first round, I think Matt Manning is definitely one of them. Gavin Lux is getting talked about as a first-round pick a lot right now, the high school shortstop from Wisconsin, and is really on the rise. Those are probably the two guys who are making the biggest leaps into the first round. Manning was more kind of a late first-round pick, and now he's a possible top 10 guy. And Gavin Lux was more, you know, probably a third-round pick coming into the year and a second-round pick early, and then he was a late first-round pick. And now, because there's such a lack of shortstops in the draft, he may go closer to the middle of the first round.
Wow. Okay, that's definitely a name that's climbing. Wow, okay. Who is your favorite name in this draft class?
I'm going to scan through our list here.
There are some good names this year. I was definitely impressed just kind of going through the list.
Yeah, I'd be tempted by Carter Keyboom, but we already have Keybooms. Like, so that one doesn't blow me away. Yeah, it might be TJ Zoick. I just like the way TJ Zoick sounds.
That's a good one. I'm going with Spencer Brickhouse.
Yeah, you get Skylar Sinski's another good one too.
That's a good one, yeah.
And then I'll tell you what, I like Ulysses Camp too.
That's a great one.
I can't think of another prospect named Ulysses in all my years of covering prospects. I like Logan Ice. Just sounds like, I don't know, like he should be in Top Gun or something. I just like the sound of Logan Ice is another good one. Yeah, there are some good names here.
Griffin Jax is a great name. The Air Force pitcher, I believe, or the Air Force player. I mean, that's a great name,
Air Force,
too.
Yep.
So, and final question. Predict the top five picks in the draft 2 weeks out.
Okay. And I'm sure I'll change my mind between now and then. But I would go with, I think A.J. Puck's going one to the Phillies. I think Nick Senzel is going two to the Reds. I think Kyle Lewis is going three to the Braves. I'll go Mickey Moniak four to the Rockies. And I will go, you know what, I'm going to go Delvin Perez fifth to the Brewers. So I'm not going to have any of the high school pitchers in the top five picks.
Gotcha. Actually, one more question if I could. Who's the injured pitcher we should be linking to the Nationals at 28 and 29?
Well, you can't say Cal Quantrill because I don't think Cal Quantrill is going to get that far. So I guess your next best candidate, although I don't know if they'd have to take him quite there, would be Jesus Luzardo, polished high school lefty who got hurt early in the season and had Tommy John surgery. So he might be your best bet for a Nationals TJ guy.
Very nice, very nice. Good name to remember. So, Jim, I could ask you about prospects and players all day long, but to be a little respectful of your time, I'm going to try to cut it here. I'd love to give you a spot for all your plugs, where we can find you before and during the draft, your Twitter, anything you want to plug.
Okay, well, I'll plug a few things in. My Twitter, and I do try to interact with fans, although I'm swamped this time of year, so I'm not as diligent as I am at other times. But my Twitter handle is Jim Callis, MLB, all one word, J-I-M-C-A-L-L-I-S, MLB, and I do try to interact with people on there and explain. If somebody says, why is this guy ranked ahead of that guy, I'll at least try to explain it as best I can. We have all kinds of content over at MLBpipeline.com, and the great thing is it's all free. You don't have to pay for any of it. Nothing's behind a paywall. Next week, we'll have our top 200 prospects list come out with video and scouting reports and grades on all those guys. I'll have a new mock draft next week. Jonathan Mayo and I will both have more mock drafts the week of the draft. And then during draft week, we'll both be part of the broadcast on MLB Network, the first day, the first two rounds. And then we will sit there and try to give you at least a nugget of scouting information on every player drafted in rounds 3 through 10 on day 2. And then we're basically on call on day 3, Ryan, when it's rapid-fire picks, rounds 11 through 40, where we are in the studio, in the MLB Advanced Media Studio, in case there's a problem with the conference call or they need to check something out for a couple minutes. We are the space fillers. We'll do like a quick 5-minute pre-draft show, and maybe one in the middle when they take a 5-minute break. But otherwise, that's just rapid-fire picks. But you will get at least a snippet, a glimpse of us on day 3 as well.
I am always impressed when I'm listening to the day 3 of the draft and you guys start dropping nuggets of information on some of these players. It's always just fantastic, and I'm always so impressed. So,
thanks.
Jim, thank you so much. This is definitely one of my favorite shows to record every year, and I just can't thank you enough for generously giving a little bit of time here before the draft to come and educate us ahead of the 2016 draft.
Well, thanks for the questions. You know, I always like talking draft. Glad to do it, and always enjoy talking about it. So anytime.
Well, thank you very much, and good luck the next 2 weeks. I hope you can get some sleep in the midst of all the phone calls and all the writing.
Yeah, I hope so too. Thanks, Ryan.
And that was episode 70 of the Nats GM Show with MLB.com's Jim Callis. What a great, great just reference and resource for the MLB draft. I mean, I can only imagine. I hope everybody enjoyed that as much as I did, because I love talking draft with Jim every year, and he's been kind enough now. This is the third year he's come on the show, and actually, as it turns out, he was the inaugural guest of the Nats GM Show. So thank you to Jim for always being so great to the site, and for coming on ahead of the draft and getting us prepared for the MLB draft. We are done for this week. Episode 70 is a wrap. Bye for now.